This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, the latest episode of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet feature. This is our 273rd feature show. I am your host for this month's edition, Gary Kernahan. And here we're today, we're here to talk about one of the classic teams of the classic era of WWF. We're here to talk about Demolition. And to make up my panel, my classic panel this evening, it is the smash to my axe, my brother, Derek Kernahan. Derek, welcome.
Hi, guys. Good to be back. It's been a while since I've done one, but I'm delighted to be here to talk about which I think is probably one of my favourite tag teams ever.
Absolutely. And a classic tag team that was ruined by a third wheel that nobody really wanted but was necessitated at the time. We have our very own crush for this evening, Scott McLeod. Scott, how are you doing?
I thought the classic third wheel that ruined everything in your guys' circle was Stephen Wilson, but... like Crush, I'm here to help carry the load.
Stephen's like, he can be Mr. Fuji in this scenario. Well, before we start talking about Demolition, please, everybody, do check out our extensive back catalogue. We're on all good and even some bad podcasts and sites. You can check us out at Suplex Retweet on all the socials. And as we said, we're here to talk about Demolition. Demolition, the team that's probably best known as Axe and Smash, Bill Eadie and Barry Drysdale, who were then joined latterly by Brian Adams as Crush. They went on to be three-time WWF Tag Team Champions and would hold the Tag Team Championship for a record and actually still hold the record for the most combined days as champions. They debuted on the 4th of January 1987, but the Demolition that debuted back in early 1987 was quite a different package. First of all, they were managed by Luscious Johnny Valiant. And Axe was actually tag teamed up with a different smash, a chap called Randy Coley, who was probably most famous as Moondog Rex. And after three appearances together, Moondog was replaced because people were recognising him and chanting Moondog during the matches. So he was replaced by Smash on the March 14th edition of Saturday Night Main Event. That's also another classic of this era of WWF. There's many things that made Demolition unique and stand out at that time. One is about the look, boys. And it was interesting to get your thoughts and your perspectives on the look of Demolition. Derek, what's your memories of the package of Demolition, how they looked?
Well, you've got to remember when we were that age, Gary, as well, they were scary, they were intimidating, you know, and stuff like that. Maybe now you realise they look a wee bit kinky, but back then, back then it was definitely like, Well, when you seen these guys coming down, you know, with their masks on, then they took the mask off and they've got the face paint on. They did look intimidating. They looked scary. They looked big men as well. But it was just, when I first seen them, I remember that I was like, God, these guys are pretty scary. And then when you think about it as you're a wee bit older, it does change your perception of them a wee bit.
Mm-hmm. Scott, a man partial to gimp masks, what are your memories?
I told you that in confidence, Gary.
Sorry about
yeah.
that.
It's interesting when you talk about the look of Demolition, because we'll probably talk about it, they're often compared to another face-painted tag team and the Road Warriors, but I think with the Road Warriors, they were always meant to look like superhero kind of comic characters, whereas these guys were clearly meant to look, like you said, scary, like intimidating. And funny enough, they took a look from because Road Warriors got their name, I think, from Road Warrior, one of the Mad Max films, and then the world Demolition took inspiration from a character called Lord Humongous from Mad Max 2. Mm-hmm. And also they said they look face paint wise was inspired a bit by Kiss, who are also huge in the 80s and everything. So taking that. But it does look intimidating. You see them coming down the pads with the really awesome music as well, the masks and everything. And they're taking the mask off and you see a close up of the paint. It's intimidating. Then when you watch the matches, try not to think about it, just two men with the weird leather straps surrounding them.
Derek.
The other thing about them, Gary, was they were so different to the other tag teams that were about in the WWF at that point as well. You know, we had the Bulldogs, the Rockers, the Hart Foundation, sort of these sort of, you know, maybe not the Hart Foundation extent with Jim Nanville Neidhart there, but they were all sort of young, high-flying sort of, you know, tag teams, whereas we had these two big, hairy ass men, as you would like it, you know, being very different than what the rest of them were, you know. You know, just like Scott said, you know, the sort of Kiss, you know, with the super pink tongues that they had first. I don't know how they managed to do that, but they had these super pink tongues anytime they wrestled as well.
Some Jolly Ranchers before they came
through. Oh, big time. They definitely had a pack of cherry drops in their pockets before they came down in their pants. But they looked totally different, you know, to any other tag team that was run about then as well, which made them stand out even more.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're quite right. There's a lot of sort of white meat baby face teams at the time, younger, more athletic teams that we'll come and talk to about some of the matches that Demolition would go on to have. But as you guys touched on there, the team would, for anybody that's not seen them, they would have the masks that would then be taken off as they came into the ring. The ring gear was black with studs over them as well, almost like an inspiration for the what was the team that the Average Joes and Dodgeball got their own gear for?
Oh yeah.
The mask. Sorry, Scott.
I was gonna say the mask also, like you look at it close up, it's almost like you can make the gimp jokes and everything, but it's almost like a leather version of like the Jason Voorhees S mask, like this kind of horror characters come to life, you know.
They were really intimidating, and there was nothing else like them at the time. And you could see that when they came to the ring, they had presence, immediate presence when they arrived at the ring. And the music as well that the team have, I just love that entrance song, Here Comes the Axe. It is super. Them all. And you mentioned, guys, the comparison to the Road Warriors, which is something that came up at the time. But Derek, is somebody that you and I grew up in this era of WWF, we had no idea who the Road Warriors were until actually a long time later, because they were the Legion of Doom to us when they arrived in WWF. But for fans like us, we had no idea actually who the Road Warriors were.
No, not at all. We just, you know, all we seen was the Demolition. And like I said, those big dominating, you know, sort of men coming down to the ring. Even when you see some of the specimens that they're wrestling against, you know, like when they wrestled the British Bulldogs, and you see Davy Boy, he wasn't obviously as big as what he became, but he's still a big, strapping man. And you can see how intimidating they were and coming down to the ring. But we never heard of, you know, the Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors before this, because, you know, at that point we didn't have any access to them. But yeah, they were totally different, totally out there. But like you said, they are obviously, they were WWF's answer to the Road Warriors at that time until obviously they joined.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things I loved about Demolition, and anybody that's ever listened to any of our shows, we've been talking about tag teams. I like tag teams that look like tag teams, mm-hmm. and Demolition looked like a tag team and they complemented each other in terms of style. I mentioned one of the things that the package that they started off with was the manager, Luscious Johnny V, who was then changed to Mr. Fuji. Part of the rationale for that was apparently it was a request made by Demolition and the feeling that Johnny V was more of a jovial, jokey character and they were a serious tag team, and actually they wanted Fuji bringing in because Fuji was more sinister. He had a lot of heat at the time. And guys, what are your thoughts and your perceptions on Mr. Fuji and his role in Demolition?
I think Demolition might be like his two most like iconic like clients from Mr. Fuji, I think personally, are these guys, and then later on Yoko. Obviously two different versions of Mr. Fuji as a manager there, but it did suit because he had came out with the suit at the time. He had the hat kind of inspired by, I think, by Oddjob from the Bond films. Let's get like the sinister character coming down with these two heavies behind him, unleashing these two monsters on the tag team division. It looked, the whole package kind of complements it. It's always good when the manager fits the team that he's mm-hmm. he's representing. And talking about the theme song we mentioned earlier, credit to Rick Derringer, who helped provide such bangers as Real American. And something I really love, like, you remember that scene from The Simpsons where they're talking about the Super Bowl teams, like the Governor's Hand, Denver Broncos, or like, oh, I love that they do a really harsh edit when Crush joined, here comes the ad, and here comes the crush.
No. Derek, Mr. Fuji, he was somebody, in some respects, you could debate whether or not Demolition needed a manager, because they were actually both, I think, decent talkers at the time. And but in this era of WWF, the managers were a big staple of the product. You had Bobby Heenan, the Heenan family, the Slick, various others. And he was there was a way of immediately establishing a character or potentially giving heat to the character or also bringing the character into a mainstream story. And Fuji did that for Demolition. This was a new team, but immediately added to the presentation. But all the fans hated Fuji and always wanted to see him get his comeuppance. And now suddenly he's got these two monsters behind him. It would be much harder to get your hands on Fuji.
Oh, definitely it would be. But when you look at Fuji as well, he had the makeup. You know, the same, like Scott said, he had, you know, he had the wee hat like Oddjob, but he had the makeup similar to Demolition. He obviously had his cane that he was willing to, you know, use if need be. But in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, that was one of the things he had before. But with a Demolition, he didn't need that because of, you know, how aggressive they were in the ring and just, you know, everything about them. It was, you know, I think it was a good compliment to have him there because, like you said, everybody hated him and got him. But like I said, these two big brutes of men, you know, there to have his back almost during that, and he could sort of maybe get away with a wee bit more. And like you said, Gary, as well, tag teams were massive round about. I'm actually watching a clip on YouTube here, and it's the Bulldogs versus the Demolition, and Fuji's just getting chased away by the Bulldog after he hit Davey Boy with a cane. So it tells you he was still doing stuff, you know, he was still hitting people with the canes and stuff like that. Even having these two big strapping men there, but it was, you know, it was a massive staple of, you know, 80s, early 90s wrestling was having a manager who was there to support you and, you know, build the gimmick and build the stage up absolutely. For these two guys to, you know, to sort of do what they're talking in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, tag team wrestling in WWF, WWE has had its ups and downs over the years, hasn't it? You grew up in the era you grew up in. You had teams like Edge and Christian, the Hardys, the Dudleys that got high spots on the cards. But back in this era, the late 80s and 90s, it wasn't uncommon for tag teams to be like proper co-main events or semi-main events or indeed main events in a lot of shows.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why like in recent years when we've seen like when we had a main event one of the nights being for the tag team titles, it was seen such a big deal because it was a higher like accolade than any tag team match it had in a long time. And like you said, the year I grew up in, the further you got into 2000, I was really watching, that was the era of two guys been thrown together, and within a month of that, the tag team champions, especially on SmackDown. SmackDown was right for that at the time. But like, Kenzo, Suzuki, and Rene Dupree got a tag team title run. But like I said, this year, like, you got the first two Survivor Series where you've got like 20 man tags, whatever, like 10 teams on either side, and like just shows how sad, even from the lower card guys up until like the champions, there were so many guys there, and these guys stand out not just because of their look, like the leather and everything, because of the size, like 6'2 and 6'3 respectively, and they comment down here being the land of the giants. Like, these guys, when they wrestled, weren't there for like to be flashy or like look elegant, like they just were there to batter people.
Yeah, and that's maybe a good segue, Scott, to talk about their in-ring style. How would you describe the in-ring style of Demolition?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Rough, I'd say. Because I watched a few matches, mostly enhanced ones, because that was the style of the time. Yeah. With the WWF and everything, like Wrestling Challenge and things like that, and a lot of their matches did seem to flow the same, but you know, I think people were into like seeing these guys just batter people, and obviously famous for their tag team finisher, and that's also always a good mark of a memorable tag finisher, writing the Demolition Decapitation, and almost a very fitting name, the way Ash just comes down on these poor jobbers.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. So great tag teams also have moves that they do together. You've got that, the heart attack that the Heart Foundation did at the time. And, you know, by today's standards, where you see, you know, Canadian destroyers being pulled out all over the left, right and centre just now. But there was something simple about this finisher that looked devastating. So Smash would put their opponent almost in like a backbreaker type of position over his knee, and Axe would go to the second rope, but sort of take a step along the rope, the middle rope, and then drop the elbow. And as he came down, Smash would give the legs a bit of a pushover, which led to this sort of almost somersault type thing that the opponent would do. And I cannot recall too many occasions where anybody kicked out of the Demolition Decapitation. That one. So, yeah. An aggressive, hard-hitting, no-nonsense, very real, but also very fitting for their character and presentation ring style. They would go on after debut to be unbeaten, but then would come up short in a sort of surprise defeat to Rick Martel and Tom Zenk, the Can-Am Connection. Do you remember them, Derek? They beat all the face tag teams about, and they would get their revenge on the Can-Am Connection at WrestleMania 4, where at the Trump Plaza, of all places, where they would...
I wonder what happened to him.
Yeah, yeah. If only he would just go away. the WrestleMania held back-to-back at the Trump Plaza. Probably WrestleMania 4, probably most famous for the title tournament that took place, but also notable for Demolition's first tag team championship, which, if memory serves me right, Mr. Fuji's Kane came into play in that match as well. They would be featured prominently in Survivor Series later that year, where actually they would turn face and enter into a feud with the Powers of Pain, the Warlord and the Barbarian, two other very big, intimidating men with face paint, Derek.
I was just about to say the exact thing there, Gary, that you said. You know, these guys were similar almost. You know, they had big, massive, you know, commanding men who, again, wore face paint, which is a staple of the late 80s of WWF wrestling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it took, we did, maybe I should have mentioned this at the time, it took Demolition a wee while, because when you go back to some of the early stuff, you see different variations of the face paint before they landed on what you think more of Axe and Smash, with the Axe having predominantly sort of silver face paint, and Smash having the, it must have taken Smash ages to do his face paint as well. It was quite intricate with the white sort of diamonds with the red and the black through them. As well, and you see some of the early variations of them, sort of all black with red through it, and blue was in one of the other pictures and videos I've seen of it. So quite different things. They would turn, we would see a double turn at Survivor Series when Mr. Fuji playing a part in that. Boys, what's your memories of Mr. Fuji and betraying Demolition?
I remember I didn't see it till like years later. My friend of mine is like a classic legend of all these old WWF tapes, and he showed me this show with the double turn and everything. And it was again like all these bloody tag teams. I think Powers of Pain have also been accused of ripping off the Road Runners, and I think they deserve it more than Demolition get it, because they've got similar haircuts and the face paint around the eyes. I mean, at least you went to the detail that Smash at least like put out for his one. At least they tried to look somewhat different. So they tried to look different from the Road Warriors. These guys just couldn't be arsed. And then you mentioned earlier on about how people wanted to see Fuji Gates come over. So now he's betrayed his tag team, and the story is them not just going beating the Powers of Pain, but getting their hands on Fuji and going through the Powers of Pain as a means to get there. So people are like, oh, that they mustn't do that big, really intimidating move that no one kicks out of. Now we want to see Fuji get hit with that move.
And he will. We'll come to that in a second. But before we get to that, we have the Royal Rumble in 1989, the second Royal ever Royal Rumble. Derek, you're nodding your head there. Do you want to come in? What are your memories of the 1989 Royal Rumble? And I'm going to guess it's maybe not anything to do with Big John Studd's victory that evening. It's
definitely nothing to do with that, guys. You're right. So, yeah, Demolition being 1-2 in the Rumble is incredible, because it was something, obviously, it's a relatively new Rumble, but a relatively new concept, the Royal Rumble at this time. But, you know, having these two men being 1-2 was a masterstroke, but also having the two of them come out and beat the shit out of each other as well during that as well was brilliant. Instead of the two of them, maybe now, you know, you see it now sometimes where tag teams sort of sneak in and, you know, sort of be pally and try and eliminate people. This wasn't their case. They two went in and, you know, kicked lumps to each other until Andre came in. But I think this is probably one of my favourite moments in Rumble history. And I think it's a staple out there for anybody. You know, just something that was just totally different. And I absolutely loved it. It was sensational just seeing these two come out as 1-2 and just kick lumps to each other. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's quite different when you look at tag teams in Royal Rumble today, Scott. So 2024 Royal Rumble. Tag teams in recent years are sort of cannon fodder in them. We've seen, I think, the new one, was it just Kofi, actually, if I remember right, from the New Day that came in the Rumble, and I was going to call him Marcel Barcel, Ludwig Kaiser from Imperium, neither of whom, you know, anybody gave a shit about appearing in it, but Axe and Smash at this particular Rumble, people took notice of their appearance and entrance into it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, basically the idea of seeing these two go at it, you know, like Bobby, like Jesse Ventura and Monsoon are bigging up the idea of the tag team champions going at it in the Royal Rumble and what that could mean. You know, nowadays, like when it's a tag team in the Rumble, like more than not, people don't usually take notice, especially if it's a tag team champion, because they know that they're probably not going to win the Rumble, but you know, easily these two guys probably could have won the Rumble back then. And you know, more often not, if a tag partner goes after another tag partner in the Rumble, it's usually part of a storyline, whereas this kid's like, oh, we'll still be pals tomorrow, but I want to win more than you, so we're just gonna batter it and apologize later.
Yeah, and they did batter lumps out of each other until literally the minute Andre the Giant came into the ring there. And one thing I would say that this, for me, it was one the first proper Royal Rumble moment. I don't know, guys, do you agree, disagree? Is there any other ones you can think of that predate this one?
100% agree with that, guys. I think it's also my favourite Rumble moment ever, having these two come out and go one and two and against each other. Yeah, I would agree. I don't see there's anything else other than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could argue that maybe the ending of the last year's Rumble way with Duggan won. That's mainly because, you know, it's the ending of the very first Rumble, the very first winner of the match. But this being the very first 30-man Rumble, the fact that, you know, it was that long ago and people still talking about this moment more so than anything else that happened with the preceding 28 entrants.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously the presentation of the Royal Rumble was very different back then. You didn't get the same production values, the music. So Demolition number one and two were the only ones that got their music played back then. So that maybe added to the value, where you got to actually hear the same theme tune twice, and you could hear that reaction in the commentators the minute they heard number two, and the music plays, that, oh, here we go. But Scott, you mentioned Mr. Fuji and the demolition decapitation, which was something that would happen to Mr. Fuji at WrestleMania 5, when Demolition would defend their tag team championship against Fuji and the Powers of Pain in a handicap match. Scott, if there's somebody that you could substitute into Mr. Fuji's place, who is there anybody that springs to mind for you? Because Fuji is certainly somebody that the fans at that time all wanted to see take that move.
Oh, I could be here all day telling you people I'd like to see take that move. But yeah, I was looking at like the reign here, because obviously with defending titles, like especially with a long reign like this, you know, you only defend the belt every so often because pay-per-views weren't as frequent back then. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, like when they were a heel, there was Demolition V, like we mentioned the Bulldog and the Heart Foundation, but when you look up online, like Cage Match, they kept going to DQs and everything with these guys until they were saving for the big moment at WrestleMania, and the big moment was seeing Fuji in the ring, because I think by that point, a lot of people watching wouldn't have remembered the fact that Fuji was also a wrestler. They just saw him as a manager, but all the same, they wanted to see him get his comeuppance, and then obviously Demolition carrying his face, because when you think about it before that turn, it'd be hard to look at these two guys and think of them as, yeah, fan favourites.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah, no, absolutely right. And you're quite right to point out, back in the day, you would have the big four pay-per-views, but the Royal Rumble, as we just mentioned, Demolition were in the Rumble. Survivor Series was all elimination tag matches, no title matches. The first title match, I think, if I'm right in saying, was Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker many years later. So there were only two pay-per-views, really, where titles were being defended. You would have Saturday night's main event, the big TV specials, where titles might get defended, and there would be the occasional wrestling challenge or superstars event. And Superstars of Wrestling is where we go to next, because Demolition would drop their titles in July 1989 to the Brainbusters, to Ann Anderson and Tully Blanchard. At the time, dropping their titles for a record of 477 days, a record that would last until 2016, when the New Day would beat that record, and they would drop the titles actually not long after beating the Demolition's record. They would hold the title for 483 days. That record has been surpassed another two times. The current holders of that record are the Usos. But yes, dropping to the Brainbusters. I know the Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard would be massive staples of WCW. Again, it's not something and big part of the Four Horsemen. But when they came to WWF, they were part of a very different package and presentation. And to be honest, I found them to be as dull as dishwater. I don't know, guys, if you have any thoughts on the Brainbusters being the team that were chosen to dethrone Demolition.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a bit weird getting them to do it, considering there was so many different tag teams out there who could have held it for a while, and, you know, the lead up to, you know, Mania, you know, or whatever it was then, as well. It was definitely a weird one, yeah, because, you know, there were so many up and coming and different tag teams out there that could have done it easy.
Mm-hmm. They would, their second title reign wouldn't last anywhere near as long as their first title reign. So they'd win the title back in November 1989, and then would drop it again just a month later. They actually won the title on an episode of WWF Superstars that aired on the 4th of November 1989. They would drop the titles to Andre the Giant and Haku, the Colossal Connection managed by the one and only Bobby the Brain Heenan, which would then set them up for a match at WrestleMania 6 for the Tag Team Championships at in Toronto Sky Dome. Guys, memories, obviously, when you talk about WrestleMania 6, people immediately think of Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. But what's your memories of this tag team match?
Following
on from what you said about Brain Buster, only got a very brief run with the belts, and you know, they were also managed by Heenan, and I think that was pretty much the high point of what the Brain Busters did in the WWF in that short run together, because I think those two, you're more likely to think of their time as part of the Horsemen. But then feuding with another Heenan team, and honestly, I said it's weird to see Demolition's face as a surefire way back then, I think, to make someone a baby face, and some of the fans would cheer, with someone beat up somebody managed by Bobby Heenan, because obviously he was always very detestable as the as a heel manager. And then you see this match, and I think a lot of people have said it's pretty, calling it a tag team match is generous, it's Haku 2-on-1 against Demolition, because Andre is absolutely knackered. The only reason they're in a tag team is so that Haku can do most of the work.
Yeah, I think this was maybe in the history of the tag team where one of the tag team partners never get tagged in the match. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the first time that's ever happened. And it's because of Andre's, you know, illnesses and stuff like that he had, just the way he was at that point as well. But yeah, it was a bit, it was a shame, you know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, the way the match sort of progressed out, you know, with Andre not coming into the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And this would be the last we would see of Andre the Giant as at WrestleMania in an in-ring capacity, isn't it? What would happen next? So Demolition, if we remember right, faces going into WrestleMania 6, win the tag team championships. But then there's quite a lot of change that happens for Demolition round about this period. So Axe develops, Axe, his health takes a turn for the worse. He develops an allergy to shellfish, quite a serious one. You hear him tell the stories of being, he would wrestle in Japan quite a lot and was quite fond of seafood. And he tells a story of being out for dinner with his wife. He ordered shellfish, thought there was something wrong with it, sends it back thinking it's bad. Gets a different meal, which he then leaves. They go to the cinema and he has to walk out and collapses not long afterwards. It turns out he has a severe allergic reaction to the shellfish. So WWF have got one of their biggest stars that's now out of action, his health in a precarious position. So they make a decision to bring in a third member of the group, Crush, who's Brian Adams, much, much less experienced in-ring worker to them, the idea being that Axe could be almost like a manager and potentially would transition, depending on how things would go. Crush could go off and be a single after this and Demolition could go back as a two, or there's some stories that Axe was going to move on to be go and work backstage, the latter of which wouldn't happen there. Them all. But yeah, guys, thoughts and reflections on what happened to Demolition here. They would quietly turn heel. We'll come and talk into perhaps one of the reasons why that might have happened in just a moment. But what did you, you know, the bringing in the third member of the group?
At the time, Gary, when it happened, you know, me and you were obviously quite young then, and we loved the Demolition, you know, and really liked everything to do. So it was a bit weird, I think, for us, you know, sort of not knowing the background to, you know, Axie's illness and stuff like that at the time. So when they came into this free man with this sort of relatively unknown wrestler, it was a weird one because they were so commanding and dominating. But I guess if you look at it from a logical point of view, now you're that wee bit older, you know, the illness and stuff like that, bringing someone in does make sense to do that while they're, you know, he sort of give Axie sort of time out and stuff like that. Whether or not Crush was the right guy at that point, you know, you never know who else it could have been. But I guess it makes sense from that. But when I first seen it as a, you know, sort of young wrestling fan, I was like, I didn't really understand it. And I didn't like it when it was, you know, Smash and Crush wrestling. I wanted it to be Axe and Smash all the time. With Smash outside, so obviously being the sort of manager as well at that point, I didn't really like it, but I understand why it happened now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scott, the other option would have been to have them drop the titles quickly at a house show or a TV taping and put them on the shelf until Axie's health was such that they could return. So, yeah, your thoughts on what the fork in the road, almost, the direction of travel that WWF decided to go down?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as if they were against doing that, because they often did that in the late 80s, early 90s, like changing the belts during house shows, especially when house shows weren't doing well, because that was encouraging you to go and see the house show in case something happened. But I heard like stories about Axie's issues, and I think they even said it caused him for people to have issues with his heart, which for something as physical as wrestling, it's obviously not ideal to have those kind of issues. And weird thing about Crush, you know, so he had a decent enough look, so they need someone who looked intimidating enough to fit in with the aesthetic of Demolition, and they tried to do the whole Freebird rule thing, which hadn't been seen in the WWF that time. But just this version of Demolition just didn't gel with what fans were used to. They were more reliant on cheating, like without these symmetry, they just cheated these, went behind the wrist back. They tried to keep, you know, like they're in the match they have with the Heart Foundation at SummerSlam, they keep trying to do the switch out. Oh, so it's hard to tell Demolition apart, like even Stevie Wonder could tell these guys apart. Like they don't even have a similar looking face paint. Their hair is all, they all have varying hairstyles. Like, who would confuse Axe with Crush? I don't think anyone would.
So the Freebird rule, as you touched on, was not something that was, you know, we all know what the Freebird rule is today, but that was something that we hadn't seen at the time. And, you know, I don't think, if I remember right, wasn't referred to in WWF as the Freebird rule, but we'd never seen a team at the time where there was three of them and any two of the three could defend the title. But as you said there, why would a team that had been as dominant as Demolition need a third person? I don't think that was ever properly conveyed to the audience, and that's maybe why some folk had a harder time in believing this. But why is this team that's suddenly been all dominant now needing a third person, and why are they cheating all the time to win their matches?
I think it's quite ironic that the next most prominent time, I think years later, we would see an example of a tag team defending via the Freebird rule would actually be the team that would take Demolition's record and the New Day, because they were always in switch out. I mean, I think they had it mostly like Big E and Kofi or whatever, but sometimes they'd swap Woods in with somebody else or stuff like that. But they would use that Freebird rule. And from what I've heard of it, when you talked about Axe and his backstage role, he's claimed, he said that he was offered a backstage role, but he said that they presented it to him and what his salary would be one way. And when he actually went to start his job, his duties were much less, which means the pay was much less than what they said. So I think he felt he was kind of lied to in a way, which slowly led to his kind of exit.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, Scott, they would drop the titles at SummerSlam 1990 for the final time to the Heart Foundation, my favourite tag team ever, as I look up at my picture of Bret the Hitman Hart and myself. There, they would lose the title in a 2 out of 3 falls match. So classic 2 out of 3 falls. One team wins the first fall, the second team wins the second fall. Demolition get caught trying to cheat with Axe, as you touched on, trying to sneak into the match. But they get stopped and found out when the Legion of Doom make an appearance. The Heart Foundation take advantage of that and secure the victory and the tag team championships. And then we're off to the races, so to seem, with Demolition and Legion of Doom. But actually, I think this next chapter in Demolition is probably their final chapter in WWF, and the start of their final chapter as a tag team. Thoughts on Demolition versus the LOD guys? I think it's something that people were excited about, but maybe an example of, you know, maybe when you see it, you know, what was presented to us wasn't quite what we hoped it would be.
It sounds on paper like, you know, the ultimate tag team match, you know, ultimate tag team versus tag team. That's what you that's what you would want to see. Two big commanding tag teams going at it and stuff like that. But obviously by then, you know, Demolition weren't what they were. LOD were massively popular, and then it seemed like, you know, towards the end, obviously the storytelling and stuff like that with Demolition was getting more and more ridiculous with them, you know, like you're saying, having to cheat to win and stuff like that. You know, Axe wasn't as prominent as he was before. So it was definitely a bit of a, I would say it was a massive anticlimax. From what it should have been.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, I think if anyone had seen the comparisons between the two, that would be like the dream match. And they were teasing, like, I think for months on the house shows, they were doing like 6-man tags, the LOD and the Ultimate Warrior by these three. And then I think it would be these three and Mr. Perfect teaming against Ultimate Warrior, Road Warriors, and Kerry Von Erich, you know, all the guys who had various warrior names, but they never actually got that proper on pay per view. Between the two, I think it was you guys that shared us that match between the two from a wrestling challenge, and that ends in an absolute clusterfuck in the end. And like, surely, because they're both in matches at Mania 7, but they're both very throwaway matches. Like, LOD's match doesn't even last a full minute. So surely that should have been the big blow off, you know, LOD and Demolition at WrestleMania. But I think a lot of people have said that, you know, Vince didn't need his version of the of LOD when he had the actual LOD.
Yeah, I want to just pick that up in a sec. So when LOD and Demolition first competed with one another in WWF, LOD, I believe, beat Demolition within 8 minutes. So we certainly didn't get towards the big match that both of you touched on that actually these teams probably deserved. And I think when you hear the teams interviewed, they are both disappointed by that. We've done quite a bit of research, as hopefully folk that are listening to the show tonight realise. Maybe not as much as Derry, because I never came across anything that talked about how hairy either man's arse was in advance of this. But you're right, Scott. The 6-man tags, you know, featuring the Ultimate Warrior, quite a lot of star power there, but they were more often than not in the losing end of those. And as LOD went into the ascendancy, Demolition went the opposite direction, which is quite unusual and unique for Vince McMahon. We often hear if he hasn't created it, he is less interested in it, and there's plenty of examples of that over history. But this seems to be counter to that. He's invested a lot of time and effort in building up his version, as I think you described them there, of Demolition, or LOD, and now he's got the other ones. Why has he decided to do that? I know it's dangerous to ask you to try and put yourself in the mind of somebody like Vince McMahon, but any thoughts, guys, on what's going on there?
I think the run of Demolition proves that thing about Vince not liking the thing that he didn't create isn't always the case, because, like, most people who have that mindset probably would never see the Brainbusters, stalwarts of the NWA and everything in the television there, being the ones that ended their mammoth reign, but they did, even though they won them back. Mm-hmm. And then this happens. But I think Vince secretly maybe always wanted to get the LOD, and now that he finally had them, you know, I think in a weird way, it's almost a mild blessing for Demolition they never got that match, because I think all of us can guess that Demolition would have came in the losing end once again when they went up against LOD, and that match probably would have been the more logical inclusion.
Yeah.
Have LOD go over.
Yeah, absolutely. As the LOD would gain prominence, Demolition, as we said, would fade into the background. They tried to reunite them again. Mr. Fuji rejoined the team. but that didn't work. Axe would leave WWF in late 1990, which Jack Tunney, the on-screen WWF president, would come out with a ruling to say that there could only be two members of Demolition, so Axe was out of the door there. And Scott, you mentioned that wrestling challenge match. If folk listen to this, throw that into YouTube, you'll Demolition versus LOD, you'll find this match. And the contrast between the two teams, I don't think could be any more stark than in this match. Demolition, Crush and Smash come to the ring, led by Mr. Fuji, with a different ring music to the one we mentioned at the start, to, if I'm being generous, a lukewarm response to the audience, followed by LOD with, oh, what a rush, and the crowd popping massively. And it's I don't think it could be more of a stark contrast to the direction of travel that both teams were going in at that time. Towards the end of the run as a team, Crush and Smash would be presented, I would say, more as glorified jobbers. Crush would have a leave of absence. Oh, actually, just before that, they did go and do matches for SWS in Japan and would still be booked quite prominently over there. Crush would have a leave of absence, and Smash would continue on TV as a singles wrestler more often than not in the losing end. But that would take us to the end of the team, essentially, in 1991, about 4 years after their debuted. Smash would be repackaged as the Repo Man of all people, and Crush would come back as Hawaiian Crush, who actually I loved at the time, the colours and so on of them all. Crush would go on to have a bit more of a noteworthy, well, quite an interesting career. He would turn heel on the Macho Man Randy Savage and have Macho Man's last match in WWF with him. He would join the Nation of Domination in the late 1990s. Before moving off to WCW, where he become part of the NWO and latterly form a team called Chronic, who would also turn up in WWF, where their run was absolutely chronic, where they would have an absolutely horrendous match and feud with The Undertaker and Kane after the invasion. And sadly, Crush Brian Adams passed away in 2007. 2007 was actually the year that Axe and Smash would reunite in the Indies for the first time, and would continue to do so up until 2017, and today can be found making regular appearances at fan conventions across the globe. Guys, I'm keen to ask for your thoughts and opinions on Demolition, what Demolition's, how you describe Demolition's legacy. On a couple of years ago, on one of our Mount Rushmores of wrestling shows, the panel at the time debated who the greatest tag teams in wrestling history were. The four teams that they decided to put on the mountain that time were the Legion of Doom, Harlem Heat, the Hardy Boys, and the Motor City Machine Guns. Guys, how would you describe Demolition's legacy?
It's really hard to say, because like, I think if you were more so a fan of like the Road Warriors, then maybe you have a slightly different opinion of Demolition. Like, they're being tarred with that brush pretty much unfairly as the knockoff Road Warriors, I think, is a bit harsh. But then I think there was a kind of a FU in the way that WWE gave away their tag team run, because I think they were amongst a group of wrestlers suing the company or concussion issues and everything, and so they kind of decided to, well, fine, we'll give your record away to someone else. But I think they are a team that really, they are a really key part of that era of tag team wrestling. I think you needed a team like Demolition back then. I think they'll go down, weirdly enough, as maybe, despite having that long reign, you know, a reign that took ages for them anyone to break, I think it might go down as one of the more underrated, underappreciated teams of that era, and a team that maybe towards the end deserved a bit more of the way they were handled after Axe's health issues.
It's a really good summary, Scott. Derek?
Yeah, for me, they're one of my all time favourite tag teams. They're up there with, you know, the Hart Foundation, and LOD for me in terms of tag teams. I think it's really sad and disappointing how it ended with them, because they were so dominant during that early stage, and they took a lot of the mantle on for tag team wrestling at that point for the WWF as well. So it's bitterly disappointing to see how it ended for them in the WWF at that time as well. You know, like you Scott said, probably underappreciated, I think, and everything that they've done for it, and sort of got a bit cast away as soon as Vince got LOD in. You know, that was a real shame. But obviously at that point, Gary, like I said earlier, we didn't know any of this. We just sort of seen them as a fantastic tag team. You know, whether they were babyface or heel, they were brilliant. You know, and having someone there like Fuji just to enhance that as well made it all the better for me. Like I said, if that Mount Rushmore tag team, I think they would definitely be in it for a consideration. If me or you were on that show, I think we might have had putting them in for a consideration in there. Sort of same question, but to you guys, what do you think of Demolition and, you know, what they've done for the tag team industry?
I think they were massive attractions in a really peak period for WWF, which is a massive achievement. The tag team division at the time, actually the roster at the time, was absolutely stacked of stars and talent. But Demolition were unique. They stood out in the pack. They were massive stars. They had an incredible run, probably 3 out of the 4 years of that run. And that's maybe something that's surprising, that it was a 4-year run. But yet, all this time later, we can still vividly remember the team and some of the things they've achieved, which I think makes them stand out. They had a rather quick demise, sadly, after Axie's health issues and probably WWF signing the Legion of Doom. But the Axe and Smash in particular should look back at their career and their achievements with a lot of pride, as we look back on their achievements with a lot of fondness. They are not currently members of the WWE Hall of Fame. So one final question is, are they Hall of Fame worthy, guys?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, it's a short but overall, I think, important run. I think now that we've looked back on it, there is a lot more memorable moments than some people might expect, and especially under Triple H. Triple H, I think, as you've seen with NXT in the late 2010s, he has more of a respect for tag team wrestling. You know, I think it was under him that we got that tag team event at WrestleMania, whereas I think with Vince, after the whole loss, then they probably wouldn't have stood a chance of being in the Hall of Fame, but maybe not like this coming Hall of Fame, but some point in the next couple of years, I could definitely see Demolition getting that nod.
Yeah, I agree. I think they would be a worthy participants in the Hall of Fame, basically for everything, like you said, Gary, what they've done for the tag team. And like you said, the roster at that time was absolutely stacked, but they were the ones that were, you know, entertaining the crowd. They were, you know, as soon as the music went, there was cheers. You know, they were fantastic, and, you know, they bring everything, you know, not almost to life, but they, you know, they sort of dominated that tag team, you know, for such a long time. I would definitely say that they're well worthy of a place in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree, guys. I wholeheartedly agree with that, and hope they get their recognition and a final moment in the big spotlight.
Well, the question there, though, Gary, is if you induct them, you know, I think the period where Crush was brought in is also linked in with the kind of downfall of WWE. So that would lead to an argument there. Do you induct just Axe and Smash? Do you induct them with Mr. Fuji and with Crush as a whole package? Because remember, I think the Freebirds at one point swapped out one of the members, and then all four got inducted in the Hall of Fame when they all went in. So would you do the same for Demolition, or would it just be the OG two?
It's interesting. I personally would go with the OG two of it. I would go for Axe and Smash, but who knows? who knows what they might do. It probably would be, in some ways, be a kinder, more compassionate thing to put in the full group. And certainly Crush did have a part in that group's history, so he would be he'd have to be recognised. He certainly would be mentioned during the speech, but if it was me, I'd probably go with the OG too. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I could see an argument either way.
Yeah.
I know Fiji thinks already in the Hall of Fame, but you know, we've seen people go in like, multiple times, either as part of a group or individually. I think Fiji was a key part of it, so I could see an argument for him going in with them, because like, you remember when Harlem Heat came in, I think they both said like, we would have loved it if Sherry could have went in with us. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole two-time Hall of Famer accolade is probably less prestigious these days, because there's so many of them, and the fact that X-Pac is a two-time Hall of Famer. I mean, he went in with DX, rightly so in that instance, but also as part of the NWO, which I find a wee bit perplexing. but on that note, guys, shall we draw our career review of Demolition to a close? A really incredible tag team with a big impact on the tag team landscape. Folks, if you have enjoyed what you've listened to today, please do check out our other shows. You can hear Ross McLeod hosting with members of the team every week, ESSR Central. You can join the boys on a Saturday morning for our Saturday Draft Live show. And every month, we'll be back with a different feature show. We're very much on the road to WrestleMania. So the GOAT, David Campbell, has been producing a special, very special WrestleMania show. We're going to have the history of the Bloodline as the next edition of ESSR feature, where you'll hear from all of the members of the team presenting different chapters of that story. Scott and I will have one of them. So we'll be getting back together to record that soon, partner. Thank you guys for joining me this evening. Scott, thank you so much. Derek, thank you so much for your input this evening.
Very nice being here.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be back.
Thank you. And thank you for listening, folks. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.